ride ain't with me, then it ain't right. Yeah.
Aaron Hicks doing positive things. It's everywhere. What's up, everybody? Welcome to a brand new episode of the Empire 161 show on another Sunday evening. We are kicking it off with Same Squad by Pilo, which is Aaron Hicks' walk-up music at the moment. So, yeah, positive vibes for Aaron Hicks this week. You know, maybe he's been getting better. He hasn't been like a total. He's not joking yet. But yeah, thanks for joining us. If you're joining us on Facebook, if you're joining us on YouTube, if you're joining us on Twitter, joining us wherever you found your audio only podcast version of Pop Culture Bros. We appreciate the support. And with me as always is Lisa Garcia. Lisa, what's up?
Man, I'm tired. I'm going to try to bring energy like I always try to, but Ed and I went to the game today. Sadly, it was a disappointing loss, but it was also really long. It ended at like 5:45. I got home at 7. My food's not here yet, so in a few minutes, you're going to hear my buzzer, and I apologize for that because I tried to order my food as soon as I got home, and it still hasn't gotten here. So sorry about that, folks, but a girl got to eat. But yeah, I'm a little tired because it was hot today, but we had a good time. I had a delicious shake. We also had halal, guys, which was my first time getting it. Mm-hmm. That chicken gyro was on point, but my Bronx Bomber shake was even more delicious. If you guys haven't had one of their Grand Slam shakes at the stadium, highly recommend you try one. They are so good, and it was so refreshing, and I needed it because of how hot it was out today. So that's what I'm sticking with for today.
Positive vibes, right? Positive vibes.
Positive vibes.
But yeah, so that shake did look really good. It did look good. It might have inspired me to maybe get one of my own tomorrow night or Tuesday night. One or the other, I'll pick one. I'll send a picture of it. I know I'm going to give in to whatever the chocolate one is, because that's just what I
do it.
We'll see. I'm sure it'll have like a cookie and a brownie and a cake on the side or whatever the hell they can top onto without it falling off.
The side things are ridiculous. Like I
said,
there's the one where they literally have a normal slice of cake, a big normal slice of cake on top. I couldn't get that one just for general purpose. Like it's either the cake or a shake. I can't do both.
Yeah, I had with the late breakfast, the halal guys had me good. I had half, and then I had half in the middle of the game, but I needed to get some to drink to go with that because I always throw in the hot sauce, but I'm not crazy. I needed my beverage to wash it down with. So, yeah, thumbs up to Yankee Stadium today, definitely they always do it. Listen, I rarely ever have anything bad at the stadium, so props to that. All right, so let's just go ahead and get into our first segment today. And we're going to kick it off with The Captain, episodes 3 and 4 that dropped last Thursday on ESPN, or if you found it on ESPN Plus since, it's pretty accessible. I tend to TBR them, apparently, and then, catch them at some point. So I guess over the course of the episodes now, they've covered the 2000 Subway series in episode 3, it's still like... that might be the most fun World Series that I could recall. I don't know. It's hard to compare all of them. They're all fun. Obviously, the teams in the World Series, it's fun no matter what. But that was just – it's just so incredible that every single person was into it. Just no matter where the hell you went, that's all anyone was ever talking about. And I know Jeter mentions that in the documentary, and I thought that was really interesting. So, to see it from his perspective as well. Another really – solid episode, and then I thought it was funny the way they depicted the 99 World Series, that was just like a cakewalk over the Braves because the Braves had no chance, which is kind of what it was like. As good as the Braves were, that 99 World Series just stomped all over them. And I guess one of my favorite parts in episode 3 was when they talked about the Roger Clemens trade, and Clemens came over and stuff. I'm one who just dealt with Clemens eventually. I never really wholeheartedly warmed up to him. I don't even know if I ever owned a name and number Clemens shirt, which if I don't own a name and number of your shirt, apparently with the Yankees, then there's got to be a problem because I'll pretty much just buy anybody's shirt. The t-shirt jerseys are a whole other story. So extremely picky about that one. But yeah, Derek and was it Knobloch that put on the catcher's gear?
Yes.
And they in spring training and he threw behind them and everything like that just to get that out of the way. Yep. I thought that because Clemens was pegging him left and right when he was on the Blue Jays and everything like that. But yeah, I thought that was a lot of fun and it was insight to see how they welcomed them in and maybe kind of let bygones be bygones and moved on with that. What were your highlights for episode 3?
So I had a few things that I found pretty interesting. I mean, so you and I talked about this yesterday. It sounds like they, the A-Rod thing, they kind of repeated a little bit and then dove a little bit more in it.
Yeah.
So one of the first thing he says in the episode was, it takes me a very, very long time before I can fully trust someone. If you slight me in any way, I have the unique ability to just cut you off. So there are two things in this episode in particular. There's one thing in this episode and one thing in the episode 4 that resonate with me. This resonates with me because there are some folks out there that know that I have cut them off. I've given them a couple of chances, which is more than what he does. But there are definitely some people that were in my life that were friends, longtime friends, that I cut off and have never looked back. Or regretted doing so. And I'm talking about people from high school. I'm not talking about a certain somebody that may or may not listen to this and then think I'm talking about them. It's not you. I'm talking about people I knew in high school. So when he said that, I was like, yes, I know what that's about. But I think it is a unique ability because, you know, I think by human nature, we try to give people, you know, chances and opportunities, right? Especially if they've been in your life a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, who he was talking about, Alex Rodriguez, he just kept tripping over himself. And he kind of deserved for him to be cut off. And I think he understands that too. I think he really understood it based on what, you know, he said in the interview. But who knows? We just talked about this other thing. I thought, I had no idea he got an umbilical hernia by falling on ice on New Year's Eve. So that sounds was kind of a, that was kind of really, first of all, I never heard of that. And secondly, that was just a weird thing that like, I didn't know what happened to him. So I was like, what? How do you fall on ice and hurt your belly button? I don't understand. That's
Darius is apparently not quite like Run DMC, who we all know has walked on ice and never fell.
And then, of course, because I don't like him, I loved what other people were saying about Alex Rodriguez. Somebody said Derek Jeter wanted to be a Yankee. Alex Rodriguez wanted to be a star. And then I thought there were major shots fired by Joe Torre. He said in baseball, it's important to play together. And Derek understood that. Alex always wanted to be a star.
Yeah. Did you by any chance read Joe Torre's book, The Yankee Years?
I did it. My dad has it. I have to borrow it from him and read it. But wait, if I did, I don't remember. But I know that it was like very like he had favorites. It was very clear.
Yeah, and if you get a chance, read it if you're interested. But so Torre went ahead and let out a lot of things about A-Rod and stuff. And pretty much everyone's talked about him at some point in the era. And yeah, he got it pretty bad in episode 3. But I thought to tell you the truth, I actually do think from A-Rod speaking about it, he kind of seems like he is coming to terms, like he's not trying to hide from it or anything. He kind of was just owning it and like, you know, I messed up. I mean, that's it. I mean, I shouldn't have said that. I think he clarified his comments a little further because they were also talking to the writer who wrote it. And the way that they were phrasing it was making it sound even worse than maybe what his intentions were, which happens. That does tend to happen. So if we're being fair, I wasn't an A-Rod fan at one point. I never made any gripes about that. But yeah, once you start suing the team and you get caught for steroids the second time, then, you know, it's kind of hard to defend you and you're just a douche and that's the end of you. But so that was me cutting A-Rod off. So, you know, his jersey, I still have one because I've needed one for the last season in the stadium in 2008. That's it. But I'm waiting for the day when someone not named Joey Gallo can make me want to wear number 13 again, and I can maybe cover up the patch. I'll put the tape on the patch, and it'll just be that. But he did see, I did appreciate he wasn't shying away from it, that he kind of owned it, and he was phrasing it like, hey, they're such a good team that you don't go in trying to stop, you know, Jeter. That's the guy that beats you, Bernie and O'Neill and, you know, Tino and everyone else there. I guess that's what he meant by it, and, of course, puts his foot in his mouth and says what he said, and that's that. He even said that at the time he would have said the same thing about himself with Griffey, you know, Eddie Martinez and stuff like that. So I guess it was – I did like the fact that Alex got a chance to, you know, clarify his statements, because we've never heard that before either. We've only heard the quotes, and that was that. So it was cool to see him get it, see his side. He wasn't saying that, oh, it's all good now.
You know, is it him clarifying, or is it him trying to make himself look better?
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I think honestly though, Lisa, I think it could be a little bit of both.
And I definitely think it's a little bit of both. And just to be fair, like you said, that reporter totally had an agenda.
Oh, of course.
And admitted it on this documentary.
Yeah.
He was it didn't bother me at all.
Yeah, he was like, you know, whatever. Even George Steinbrenner was like, when he got, you know, when he gets traded later on, was just like, you should just let the guys play. Stop trying so hard to, like, drive the wedge between them, you know, to just let it be. But, yeah, it's probably that. And it's also maybe that Alex is older now and he's looking back on it. And we've done that before. I'm sure all of us have said that when you're older, you look back on things you did when you were younger. You're like, listen, I was stupid. What the hell was I thinking about or anything like that? I don't know. We could only take it for face value, but I did like seeing both sides of the story and them able to elaborate on what it was that was there. But, yeah, and then the episode 4 with the 9/11, that opens up pretty much with 9/11, and every time I see that stuff, my mind goes right back to it again. And, you know, the importance of, you know, the healing process with baseball I've taken on, and also seeing a little bit of Latino and Bernie and everyone else that – never got to really hear them talk about that day that much either. Everyone has their story of where they were. And I thought that was pretty interesting. And then the 2001 World Series for me is still like the second like biggest heartbreak as a Yankee fan. 95 will always be my worst. I can't imagine anything being worse than 95. It's just whatever. There's a lot of time. But 2001 is a close second. And then 04 is definitely
third. Well, before we dive into the World Series, I just want to say this was also the episode where they talked about the ALDS and the flip throw that
yes,
nowhere. And like every time I think about, there's two plays that he was involved in that I just like, I'm always like, holy crap, I'm never going to forget those two plays. It was the flip throw and when he dove into the stands after catching the foul ball and comes out all bloody. The flip throw though, like, I don't care how much you prepare for every eventuality. Like, you expect the ball to hit one of the two cutoff people. He was cutoff number 3. So he's like, I just knew it had to get to Jorge as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. Jorge was running up. He even said, I was running to get the ball, and then I saw Derek come out of nowhere, so I fell back. Mm-hmm. Like, nobody expected him to be there. If he wasn't there, he wouldn't have gotten in trouble for not being there. Like, it was just that, like, I know he said everybody thinks it's a natural instinct, but he was like, no, I was actually thinking I have to be there. Like, I don't know. That play still boggles my mind all the time.
It is. And I recall watching that game specifically, too. I'll never forget.
I lost my mind.
Mike Mussina, Barry Zito, 1-0 game. Posada hits the solo home run. And, yeah, losing my shit when obviously the play happened. And even looking at the replays 100 times to see – he was actually out, and you know he was, and it's true. Jeremy Giambi slides right there. We're not talking about this,
correct?
Because what I'm not saying they would have lost the game and they wouldn't have came back to win the series, but that run scores tie game, and then you see what happens. So that's always cool. And game five though of that series, when they came back to beat Oakland in Yankee Stadium, was the original, and they showed this, the original fall into the stands and dive play that Derek made. He didn't come up bloody and everything like that, which is in this. But I think people tend to forget that's the original one where he kind of went over and, like, he literally caught it as he was flying.
Yeah, he went over backwards on that. Yeah. The other one, he went over forward.
Yeah, because the other one, the dive play, he really did, because he even said it in episode 4, was that he was like, yeah, the catch was the easy part. Like, there's no way you're stopping the momentum, and that's when he ate it. And then there's also a fan who ate his cleat, because he goes, if you watch the replay, his foot goes up and someone takes his cleat in the face. Yeah. I want to hear about that guy who got the cleat in the face. But, yeah, no, that game 5 and to come back to – because they were down 0-2 to Oakland to come back and rally to beat them. That was incredible. And still remember there was a guy in the – I'm pretty sure I have a picture of it, like, from one of the snap cameras back then. Someone was drinking, like, a bottle of, like, Henny I was in the left field bleachers in the old Yankee Stadium, so anything goes there. There's a guy with a Henny holding it up and passing it around. Cops are there. They don't give a shit. It was a madhouse, so that brought back a lot of great memories, because that was one of the most fun playoff games I've ever been to.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty cool. And that's when I started talking about the illusion that no matter how cold it is in October in the playoffs, there's that many people in the Yankee Stadium where I actually start feeling warm. Like, it almost doesn't matter, but
yeah,
you get the body there and you're cheering and everything else. So, yeah, and then they talked about George and Derek. And their whole thing, and that, you know, after, you know, in 2002, when the writers started, you know, the New York sports writers started going after Derek about staying out late, and they had the Visa card commercial. I thought it was a nice way to bury the hatchet with that. So that was cool. And then Derek gets named officially captain. That was cool. And then Matsui came aboard. And I'm dying to hear more Matsui now in the next couple of episodes.
Oh, it's got to be more. Yeah, I can't wait for that, because I thought that their friendship was, like, one of the – I loved Matsui and his personality. So yeah. I'm just looking forward to seeing him being interviewed. So there's a couple of things in this episode that stood out for me. First of all, I think it's the first time we see Michael Jordan.
Yes. Yes, actually, so, yes. MJ has made
the appearance. I'm surprised you didn't mention that. Yeah. So one of the things he had to say, which I think is high praise coming from him, was Derek Jeter has always been a winner and has always inspired other players to do well. Tom Verducci, a sports writer, like he really said something that I think is very key. The greatest thing you can have is never being satisfied with success. And I feel like Derek Jeter personifies that. Yeah. And then my favorite quote of his from this entire documentary so far, when he got named captain, and he said, just because you're in a position of power doesn't mean people will listen to you. They'll hear you, but you have to take the time to get to know people. And sure. I feel like that is so important. Without knowing that he ever said this, like, this is how I work. This is how I do the job that I do in real life. I interact with, so I supervise a large number of people. And I make sure to go to every one of my programs regularly and get to know the team members in each of the programs, not just the directors that are my direct reports. I make sure I get to know the entire team. I do second interviews with people. I, you know, like, remember what they say. I ask them about their families. I ask them about things that they do, and I'm genuine and listening to them. I think that is so important. The higher up you go in any organization, whether it's the New York Yankees or the organization I work in, you know, the less actual time you do have to interact with folks. So when you do, it really has to be quality and genuine. And I feel like that's the only way that you can have a team that's successful. And I'm all about teams. It's one of the things that, like, I talk to my teams about is, like, we're our branch is a family, and we're going to act like a family together. Like, we're going to work together. We're going to work seamlessly. We're going to communicate a lot. Because that's the only way that we could be really successful and great. So when he said that, I paused it and I was like, yes, let me write this down for the podcast. Because I just think that that's so key. And you don't have to be in a person's face, especially when the cameras are out. It's more important. And that's why I told you that I really like Jorge Posada, because I feel like he was a silent captain, right? So he wasn't named captain. But he 100% spoke to people in the locker room or, you know, like in the dugout. He didn't make it. He wasn't in your face. And I think Derek was that way, too. I feel like Aaron Judge is that way. Hint, hint, Yankees. I feel like there's a lot of people that are that way. You know, they talk about John Carlos Stanton being that way too. So I think the best captains are the ones that, like, you don't even like, you know that they're named the captain, but they're not acting like they're you know, like, responsible for certain things. They're just doing it because that's who they are as a person. So that's definitely the thing that resonated with me the most so far.
Yeah, and that team, you know, the 90s Dynasty team, and after, yeah, Posada was a leader. You hear stories about Tino Martinez was a big vocal leader, and that Tino would literally get in people's – he was one who, in the locker room, cameras aren't around, would get in people's faces. Mm-hmm. And when you hear it, it was pretty intense. Like, he would really get on people, you know, there. That actually reminds me, too, is that story about Chad Curtis.
Mm-hmm.
That was interesting. Because, yeah, they did talk about the brawl that happened and where Derek and A-Rod, it appeared like they were off to the side, just kind of like doing their own thing and everything. And the whole Jeter-Curtis thing, I remember hearing whispers about that, but not really obviously in the detail that was in it now. I mean, Chad Curtis has done some pretty bad things since then, like later on in life. But, the fact that, like, you know, he was trying to, like, act big and once the cameras came around and stuff like that, you know, with Derek, it was just kind of like one of those people who wants to get into a fight, or they say that they do, and it's like, yo, hold me back, man. Hold me back, man.
Yeah.
Like, stop, dude. You know you're not going to go out and fight him. And yeah. Inside. So.
Yeah. I call that a whack person.
That's pretty fair. Yeah. Jack Curtis. I loved some of the big moments Curtis had as a Yankee on the field, but yeah, eventually he's pretty whack. Unfortunately. So. All right, I guess let's go on and get to our week that was, and we're going to start off with the Subway Series. That was at Citi Field last Tuesday, where the Mets had topped the Yankees by a final of 6-3. Jordan Montgomery was not great in this game whatsoever. He took his third loss of the season, going 2 1/3 innings, 5 hits, 4 earned runs, a walk, and 3 Ks. Aaron Judge, though, in the first inning, looks like things they jumped on Taiwan Walker early, but he was 2-for-4 with his 30th home run of the season with a walk. So did Anthony Rizzo with a pretty nice opposite field shot, 2-for-4 with his 23rd home of the year. Aaron Hicks was 2-for-3 with a walk, run scored. But overall, the Yankees' offense was 0-for-8 with runners in scoring position. They had chances all night long to go ahead and to score. Biggest moment, though, that they had, well, besides the ninth inning, they did have a moment there when Edwin Diaz had kind of had him look like he made that error when he was trying to turn two, which I thought the floodgates were going to open, as we've seen. But, so, Lisa, I want to get your opinion. So, I forgot I think it may have been the fourth or fifth inning when Rizzo was up with bases loaded, which Taiwan Walker totally lost the strike zone. He falls behind 3-0 to Anthony Rizzo. And then, part of the thing that I love about baseball is that I think both sides are right in this, is that on a 3-0 pitch, usually you give Rizzo the green light, you know, to try to hit a grand slam, or do you like, this guy's all over the place, take the damn pitch? My personal philosophy would be to take the pitch, even see, make him throw two. But no, he swung at a pitch that was grooved down the middle, and he came about 2.5 feet away from hitting a grand slam. I saw some fans were crying about it, like, hey, you know, what the hell are you doing? The guy's all over the place. And Walker even admitted after the game that, dude, I grooved one over. I was shocked he swung. I was just trying to get the ball. Like, I gave him a meatball, and he just missed it. So I think both schools of thought are right. You're thinking, hey, 3-0, 7 straight out of zone, maybe I get a meatball. If I think I get one, then I'm going to crack it out. Or you're like, hey, you know, take the pitch and then, you know, see if he walks in a run, keeps the rally going. I don't think either one of them are wrong, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of what I think I love about baseball, is that both schools of thought are correct. What did you think of that? Were you mad?
What I think and what I would do are two different things.
Okay, well, what would you do in this situation then?
Ed, you know from softball that I like to swing. If I have to walk, I will, but I hate walking.
I'm saying bases loaded. Your team's trying to come back.
Yes. if it's coming down the middle, I'm probably going to swing at it, even if it's 3-0. Because if it looks good, I'm going to want to hit it. So, yeah, I probably would have done the same thing. I probably would have swung at it. And I understand that, you know, he has to come with three perfect pitches anyway, and he hadn't been. So eventually Rizzo might have walked the run in, but maybe he would have thrown three perfect pitches that Rizzo couldn't have gotten to either or whatever. I don't know. I mean, Rizzo's pretty good. He fouls off like nine pitches every at bat. So, but yeah, I would have swung at it.
Okay. Yeah, no, and that's the thing. I don't think either school of thought is wrong. I just think that, yeah, and then the four pitch walk that he had to Judge before that, was he wild or he was actually pitching around Judge to, you know, they were not trying to mess with him at that point. So.
Yeah.
I can maybe think he's not exactly wild. He literally was just pitching around him and see if he would expand the zone, and that was it. So
yeah,
that didn't happen. But the mind-boggling moment of this game was in the eighth inning, two outs, and Ottavino's on the mound, and IKF is coming up, and Boone goes to Joey Gallo as a pinch hitter. And instantaneously, obviously, Buck comes back, goes to Edwin Diaz, who was already warming up, so you knew he was coming in. And he blows away Gallo in another non-competitive at-bat, because we all knew that was coming. Edwin Diaz has been phenomenal this year. Joey Gallo has been the exact opposite of phenomenal this year. Whatever the hell you want to call it, abysmal or anything, whatever. But just another non-competitive at-bat. I don't understand why you would do that. Like, and then Boone after the game is like, oh yeah, I went with Gallo. Because, and I get it, but he was, the logic makes sense of lefty-righty. Gallo's supposedly a power hitter, you know, when he actually does make contact. Yes, he does. He does have power, but he's been horrible. And then Boone explains it by saying, oh, I wanted to get Diaz to pitch more than one inning, so maybe you can mess up tomorrow's game, because as we know, the games are interconnected. What? What the are you talking about? It's like, just stop. Let's stop. I was beyond. People were laughing when Gallo was announced. Both fan bases were pretty much laughing out of insanity, at least the people that were around me. So that was brutal. That was absolutely brutal.
Yeah, sometimes managers make decisions and it's like, what are you thinking? Like, that is like, you know when they say it's the obvious choice? It's the obvious choice not to choose. Like,
yeah, and I get IKF doesn't have a home run this season, but come on now. Like, you're going to pray that the ball accidentally hits Gallo's bat and it happens to just go ahead and go? I thought that was horrible. I thought Buck ran circles around Boone in managerial, you know, in their little matchup.
I mean, he does. So
no, Buck's a great manager. Yeah, and I'm not an anti-Boone guy. I'm really not. I think he's okay. I think he's fine. I still am on a team of wishing Girardi would have stuck around. They would have stuck with him longer. But Boone's been fine. I thought he's been much better this year, but this was not his week. This is not his week at all. So you have anything on this game before we move to the next one?
Nope, okay. Not this game. I do want to point out my food's still not here, though.
Notice, trust me, I'm keeping an eye on it. I'm waiting to see what happens. I'm eagerly awaiting to see what happens with that. All right, so then Wednesday night, the Mets went ahead and completed the two-game sweep of the first round of the Subway Series by a walk-off on a final 3-2. Domingo Ramon, silver lining was he pitched better than his first outing, only lasting 4 2/3, though. That's not great. But 5 hits, 2 earned runs, 2 walks, and 7 Ks. He was matched up with Max Scherzer, who was, I mean, Yanks were 0-7 with runners in scoring position, so it's not like they didn't have some times. There were some big moments where Scherzer did go ahead and struck out Aaron Judge. That matchup didn't really go in their favor at all. No. But Max Scherzer is also Max Scherzer, so, I mean, he's also a phenomenal pitcher. He's one of the best pitchers in baseball.
And I have a stat for him because that was his birthday.
Awesome.
And he now has 41 strikeouts on his birthday. I think it was the fourth or fifth time that he's ever pitched on his birthday. And getting those 41 strikeouts total, he passed Randy Johnson, who had 39. His birthday is on September 10th, for the most all time.
Okay. It was also Wandy Peralta's birthday, if I remember right.
It was the same day. I knew his birthday. We were talking at the same time that it was his birthday recently. So.
Kind of just popped in there. But unfortunately, Wandy Peralta took the loss on the night, putting his record at 2-3 on the season. He only lasted a third of an inning. Three hits, one earned run. Another situation, though, where Boone goes to Holmes in the eighth inning, then brings in Peralta for the ninth to face Eduardo Escobar, who's a switch hitter who is a much better right-handed hitter, and you flip him around to the right side when he can't hit his way out of a – like, if he was batting left-handed and he fell out of a boat, he wouldn't hit water. Like, that's how bad this dude has been left-handed. So that's another moment where I'm like, what are we doing here? Where are these analytics that you're getting that tells you that this is a good idea? So that was a tough one to take. DJ LeMahieu 2-for-4 though on the night with a walk. Labor Torres was 1-for-4. He did hit he did tie the game up with a 2-run homer, 16th of the season. As I mentioned, the Yankees offense 0-for-7 with runners in scoring position. So.
So I have a funny story about when Glaber hit his home run. So I was fortunate enough to go to the game with my uncle, who was visiting from Florida, my dad, and my nephew, who folks that watch the show know who that is. It was Gabriel. We're there, and my dad hadn't been to a game in a few years. So my dad was like early on, he was like, I want to leave in the eighth inning. So we were like, okay, the beginning of the eighth or after the Yankees get up? And at first he said the beginning, but we were able to convince him to wait until after the Yankees get up. So I prepped Gabriel, who was sitting next to me. I'm like, Gabriel, we're going to leave after the Yankees get up in the eighth because Pop is tired. You know, he wants to go home. And he was like, at first he was like, okay, Gleyber goes and hits his home run. And my dad's like, all right, let's go. And all of us were like, they just had the game.
Yeah.
Are you sure you want to go home? And my dad was like, yup. And I was like, all right, Gabriel, we got to go. And he was like, what? Do we have to go? And I was like, yes, we have to go. Pop wants to go home. We have to go. So we listened to the rest of the game in the car. And obviously, we're very disappointed in the car when Starling Marte hit his walk-off single.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just thought it was a funny reaction. And kind of a... I won't say a reversal of roles because Gabriel has always been into baseball, but like my dad was like, outside of you and one other person I know, my dad is the biggest Yankee fan ever. And like would schedule things around Yankee games when we were growing up.
Oh, sure.
First of all, I was very happy that I got to go to the game with him because it had been a few years. Mm-hmm. So that was just great. And he had fun. He had a really great time. He and Gabriel both fell asleep in the car ride home.
Wow.
Yeah. But and we just had a great time. And shout out to my uncle because my Theo Doug is the one that got the tickets. So it was just it was a fun night despite the outcome of the game.
Yeah, and this was the game. You know, I was all there as well with my cousin Mike, my wife Angie, my cousin Rob, and his wife Susanna, and then also like two of their cousins. I guess I was on the other side because I didn't know who they were, but so I had met them. Yeah, it was always fun. My cousin Rob seems to feel like he's intimidated by like knowledge that I would have and stuff like that. I'm like, dude, stop. Like that's crazy. And he seems to get a kick out of me shaming people for fake jerseys.
Oh, and we saw a lot of them that night in separate areas. Yes.
Yeah. It's just, it's embarrassing at times.
Hey, public service announcement, folks. The Yankees don't have their names on their jerseys for a reason, never have, never will. Can you please stop buying jerseys with their names on the back? Because that is not a real Yankee jersey. Public service announcement number two. We see all of you adults wearing the kids' jerseys. It's very obvious. You can tell what it is because the kids' jerseys, the font is smaller. And even though you may be able to fit into it, just stop. Just stop buying Yankee jerseys with names on them, period.
Yeah. T-shirts are a different story because
acceptable for it to be on the back of that shirt because it's a T-shirt. But when it's the jersey, home or away. Do not put a last name on it. And don't put your last name on it either.
It's like you played for the Yankees or something like that.
Come on. I literally played for the Yankees in their camp, and I don't have my name on the back of the shirt. I just have 24 like you're supposed to.
Yeah, and I mentioned to you earlier that at Citi Field, there were some, like, goofy games going on in between. It was actually a Tuesday game they did it for, and there was a Yankees fan who – oh, I'm sorry. They were asking two Mets fans, like, under and over 99.5 of how many Yankees fans are here tonight with their names on the back of their jerseys. And, like, four innings later, they came back and, like, well, it was the over. And I'm like, you went around and counted. Like, you actually went around – like, you're full of shit, dude. No one's buying it. And then the other goofy game that they did was they're like, well, you know, the Yankees can't have facial hair, so we're going to put facial hair on famous Yankees. And it was the guy they were asking had full Yankees gear on. And it was like, well, can you identify who these Yankees are? And he gets them all right. And it's like, oh, well, guess what you've won? A pie in the face for Mr. Met. And afterwards, you know, it was like, oh, welcome to Queens. I was like, is anyone buying that this is real for like even a sliver of a second? No. And I mentioned these things to my cousin Rob and my cousin Mike the next night, and they were embarrassed. They're like, this is why. This is, they get mad at the team for doing this kind of shit. So, whatever. But I will say, though, center field, deep fried footlong hot dog, bacon, cheese, prime rib bits, phenomenal in Citi Field. Phenomenal. Props to them. Listen, their food selection is they have a wide food selection.
They have a good food selection.
I do, in ways that it's, listen, I'm not complaining that the food selection, I'm not saying it's all great. I've had a couple of bad things there, but also some great things too. So not knocking them, but props to them for that. It's a new addition they've had there. I know everyone likes a rave Shake Shack, but Shake Shack's like on every corner in Manhattan now. So it's not. It's like bragging about having McDonald's at this point in your stadium. Like, it's not really that big of a deal anymore. You go to Pat LaFrieda, get a steak sandwich or something like that. They have Mr. Softy at Citi Field, which I give them a lot of props for. Mr. Softy is awesome.
That is really cool.
Yeah. So, you appreciate that.
You know what they have at Citi Field that they don't have anymore at Yankee Stadium?
What?
Nachos.
Ah, they do have nachos. Well, hold on. Pulled pork nachos?
I don't know.
Yankee Stadium does have nachos, though.
They don't have Mighty Quinn's anymore, even though they have a Mighty Quinn's.
Oh, they have the stands. Yeah.
Yankee Stadium, I am so upset by it. I'm still really hurting from that. That was my spot.
All right, Lisa, I'm going to do something for you. When I get sent my survey after the season, I am going to write that in.
Every time I get a survey, I'm like, bring back Mighty Quinn's! Exclamation, exclamation, exclamation.
Oh, no, they have Mighty Quinn's. They just Mighty, whoever made that decision, I wonder if it was the Yankees or was it like whoever's in charge of the food there or was it Mighty Quinn's that decided to pull it?
I don't know, but I just want them to know that there's at least one Yankee fan that is very hurt by that decision because that was you know this. That was the only thing I got at the stadium.
Yeah.
Every time.
That was your jam. No, it's not like me. Listen, I can find anything. Whatever. I mean, but I'm willing to try anything at any stadium just to at least say I'm not saying it always goes right. Sometimes it goes horribly wrong. Like in Arizona, where me and Brian had upset stomach for like the whole night. But, you know, Pit Viper sandwich got us pretty bad. It was so crazy. But,
I mean, don't get me wrong. I'll get things at the stadium. But when you really like something, you just want that. I want my Mighty Quinn pulled pork nachos to come back.
Lisa, I understand. Like, they temporarily had steak top fries off the menu. Like, when they first reopened and it was a limited capacity, that was, like, weirdly off the menu at LaBelle's. And I'm like, why would you take that out of all things off the menu for COVID? Is COVID attracted to slicing up the steak and putting it on French fries? Like, what are we doing here? But no, props to Citi Field. I enjoy Citi Field. I do. The one thing I don't enjoy is leaving Citi Field because take the stairs out. It takes about half an hour to get the hell out of that place. Mm-hmm. Just
Hold on. My food's here. Finally.
Oh.
I'll be right back, folks.
Freight elevators is what they need. Like they have at Yankee Stadium, it was like eight freight elevators that get you out of the stadium in under a minute. Come on. Beautiful stadium. Love a lot of things about it. But that's the one area where I think they really dropped the ball hard is accessibility to get in and out of the stadium is what they needed to go ahead and go for. So I think it's too late for them to handle that at this point. The smaller elevators, but doesn't quite do the trick. You just got to wait 3 years for them as well. So, all right. So that goes ahead and takes us to the Yanks heading home on Thursday night. And a game that saw two base hits on Thursday night for the Yankees. But they would eventually go ahead and win on a walk-off by Aaron Judge in the bottom of the ninth inning off of Scott Barlow. But Jameson Taillon did take a no decision, though. Good start, six innings, four hits, no earned runs, two walks and eight Ks, so he looked much better. Clay Holmes picked up his fifth win of the season as he had pitched a ninth, but two walks, so he was getting a little bit erratic, which I don't think was a sub to what happened earlier today. But Aaron Judge was a home run and the walk-off homer in the ninth was his 39th of the season. He had a walk earlier in the game. But the Yanks offense, two hits on the night. So not the prettiest, two whole hits. Not the prettiest win, but a win is a win nonetheless. So you take it, you move on. You don't apologize for winning any ball games.
Yes, I do have two stats for this game. The first one is Brady Singer, the starter for the Royals. He had seven innings of one-hit ball and recorded double-digit strikeouts, 10, and that was his second straight start doing so. So once again, we talk about both teams. We just talk more about the Yankees. And then, as you said, Aaron Judge hit his major league best 39th home run and made it his third walk-off home run of the season, which tied Mickey Mantle's club record for doing so.
I told Jerry's father about this at like 1 o'clock in the morning over a beer in a bar last night because he loves Mickey Mantle and he was raving about it too. But you got to really push him to get credit. The current day guys over legends like Mickey Mantle, that's his guy. So
yeah.
No, but anytime you're in a sentence with Mickey Mantle, I mean, that's just a big deal. So we'll see. He's got time to go ahead and own that record amongst other records. So many, many records have fallen from Aaron Judge this year.
Yep.
But Friday night's game was wild. Friday night was pint glass night at the stadium, which turned out very well for my friends Derek and Steve Bernstein as well. But a wild night, though, because the Yanks were cruising 3-0 for a while, and it seemed like it was just going to be like a laugher. And then there was no more laughing because Gerrit Cole, second game in a row, though, he takes a no decision, six innings, seven hits, five earned runs, no walks, and nine Ks. This is the second start in a row where he's had a 3-0 lead with your ace on the mound against a team that you're clearly better than and coughed it up. So, I mean, Cole's got to get his shit together, honestly. There's no other way to shoot.
A few people do. A few people have to.
I'm just saying, when you're the ace,
yes,
you feel like, you know, expectations are a bit higher. No, there's definitely some people got to get the shit together. But Cole needs to really start being the ace again and just absolutely dominating out there, especially when you're getting handed leads. So... but Albert Abreu picked up the win in relief and pushed his record to 2-0. He won an inning. But monster of the night, though. Again, Aaron Judge, 3-for-5, two home runs, putting him up to 41 of the year. Grand Slam was the pretty much coup de grace that really put this out of reach later on in the game, driving in six runs. Anthony Rizzo was 2-for-4 with his 24th home run of the season. Two runs scored on a walk. Labor Torres was 2-for-5 with a run. IKF, he's the one who tied this game up with a huge base hit as the Yanks were rallying. So he had that. Jose Trevino actually drove in the go-ahead run, you know, when and broke the tie with an infield single. And Andrew Benintendi was 1-for-3. He had an infield single for an RBI with a run score. So he got his first hit as a Yankee. since being traded over on Monday. It was. So, you know, no, sorry, Monday. It was Wednesday night he was traded, because then, the oddly enough, he came and was in the Royals hotel room when he was told, and it was that whole story where that must have been awkward. And just pretty much switch locker rooms.
I don't know if you heard this, but he found out at his hotel at like 11 or 12 o'clock at night from the manager of the team. And then he went over and played poker, I think, or some card game with some of his current teammates, the Royals.
Yeah.
But then the next day he went to the stadium and he told Aaron Boone, I didn't bring my shaving gear. Like, can I shave at the stadium? So... I thought that was a cute story when I heard that.
I mean, yeah, it makes me think the Yankees probably have shaving gear, shaving stuff.
I'm sure. They probably have a team barber
for
that role. So I do have what is now an outdated stat because something happened the night after. But as of the end of that game, Judge was the eighth player in American League and National League history to hit 41 home runs before August, joining Babe Ruth as the only Yankee to do so. Babe Ruth hit 41 in 1928. So once again, Mickey Mantle, Babe Ruth. You're about to talk about Roger Maris. Well, we've been talking about Roger Maris too. So
it's just astonishing. It's absolutely astonishing. And I know they asked in the they asked Boone in the post game, you know, about Judge's season. He was just like, amazing. It's just amazing to watch on a night in night out basis. It's just ridiculous what he's doing.
Yep.
But that wasn't – Aaron Judge wasn't done for the week, though, because in yesterday afternoon's game, which was old-timers day.
Allegedly.
Yes, old-timers introduction day, because they did not play the game this year. And, you know, honestly, there was a part of me that felt genuinely bad about trading in my tickets and not going to the games. It's the first one I missed, and I can't tell you when was the last time I missed one. But then when I started, they weren't playing the game, I was like, okay, I guess it's like semi-old-timers day. So, but Yanks took care of business by a final of 8-2. Nasty Nestor Cortez picked up his ninth win of the season. 5 innings, 5 hits, 2 earned runs, 2 walks, and 5 Ks. Mark Schmidt picked up the old-school save in line with old-timers day. Little Goose Gossage-type save there. His second of the season. He went 3 innings, 2 hits, 1 walk, and 5 Ks. So, I just have a feeling Clark Schmidt's going to play a huge role in this bullpen, you know, moving forward at some point. It kind of seems like he does have a niche for this. So, not just like a mop-up guy.
Yeah. But, so, I just want to talk about the great heads-up play that Nestor Cortez Jr. made in the top of the second inning. I thought that was really dope. Hunter Dozier was on third, and the ball was hit. Was it a bunt or just like a cheapo, like,
I think it was a cheap, just a pretty much a bunt, swinging bunt, if you want
to call it that. So I can't remember who was up, but you know, like a little dinky hit. Nestor Cortez charges and gets it. Hunter Dozier is trying to score from third. Nestor Cortez just runs right at him, misses him on the tag, but then gets him in a rundown. And then they're able to tag him out before he gets back to third. I thought that was such a heads up play. Of course, I love Nasty Nestor. That's my boy. But, like, it was just exciting to see. When he does stuff like that, like, it just makes me love him more. So that was a great play, in my opinion.
Always improvising. And that's what makes him what he is this year.
Yes. Yes. It's really fun to watch him.
No, absolutely. No, he's a blast to watch on every level. Just to see what he's going to do next and everything. And, again, the guy who doesn't maybe have the best stuff of any starting pitcher in the world, but he makes it work. And he just pretty much invents stuff and throws the kitchen sink at you. So, and he seems to always be involved in some wacky play defensively as well. So,
yes, and I love it. Can I take the bottom of the second real quick since I have a stat about that?
Go ahead.
So in the bottom of the second, Aaron Judge hits his 42nd home run of the year, which also happens to be his 200th career home run. He became the second fastest player in Major League history to reach 200 home runs. He did so in his first 671 games. And the only person who did it faster than him was Ryan Howard, who did it with 658 games. And he is the fourth fastest to reach 40 home runs in Yankee history. which is in 101 games, and he has had 9 multi-home run games, which is a Yankee record through 101 team games.
They keep falling. The records just keep falling.
This is crazy, and what makes it even crazier is that you and I likely will not, I hope we do, but we likely won't see a player achieving all of these Yankee milestones again in our lifetimes.
You never know.
You never know.
You never know.
You're right about that. But, I mean, he is breaking records that are like, there were only one or two people in there. Like,
yeah.
For a very, when you're talking about a record that Babe Ruth had up until today, that was a long time ago.
No, we say it all the time. We say it all the time. Whenever records are falling like that, and we're talking about with the Yankees, it's astonishing.
Yeah,
it really is astonishing, and it just appreciate the season that Judge is having. Like, really appreciate the season that he's having.
Yep.
So. I know his bank account's gonna appreciate the season he's having.
I hope his bank account appreciates it.
Oh no, I'm absolutely sure that will happen, and still stand by. That will be coming from Cashman and the Yankees when he does cash in. But yeah, Judge had hit his 42nd home run of the season. He was 2-for-4, 2 RBIs, 2 walks, 2 runs scored. DJ LeMahieu, though, not to get lost in shuffle, 3-for-5 with his 10th home run of the season. With a run scored, Matt Carpenter, who but hit his 15th home run of the season, and during a walk, he was 1-for-3 on the day. So pretty nice, easy cruising win yesterday. And they had, fortunately, though, did not close the sweep of the 4-game set, as the Yankees had a very weird game that we had talked about. We were at earlier today.
Long game,
but a very odd though game though because. I mean, they dropped by a final of 8-6. Jordan Montgomery, though, he was the strangest one here because he went 4 innings, 4 hits, 4 earned runs, 2 walks, and 6 Ks. But he was cruising through the first 3, and all of a sudden, like the first 4 innings, and all of a sudden he completely lost it out of nowhere. Not that they were hitting him hard or anything like that, or tattooing him, but dinkers and dunkers and walks. He couldn't find the strike zone out of nowhere.
That seems to be the theme for the Yankee pitchers today, though.
Oh, yeah, no, Marinaccio, who was awesome, all of a sudden he gives up a home run, a blast to Hunter Dozier.
Mm-hmm.
And then Clay Holmes couldn't find anything today. So,
yeah.
I mean, these guys got to settle down and be part of that bullpen that, you know, is their strength, the strength of the team. But Clay Holmes was picked up his second loss of the season, 2/3 of an inning, 3 earned runs, a walk. But plenty of offense, though. DJ LeMahieu was 2-for-5 with his 11th home run of the season, 2 RBIs. Anthony Rizzo, who hit the go-ahead home run in the 7th inning, which you felt that was coming. As soon as Rizzo was coming up and a runner's run, at least me, in my head, it was already playing out that we know what's coming. You kind of saw that coming.
But that, like you said at the game, that home run went far.
It was the back of the second deck. I have not seen many home runs go there. Not many home runs go there. So that was a shot. That was his 25th of the season. So he had 3 RBIs and a walk. And who put Matt Carpenter, though, 2-for-3 with 2 doubles of his own and a run scored as well. So he continues to get at-bats, which is, you know, it is – he's going to get at-bats until Stanton comes back. And then I have a feeling that he would go more of like a bench roll and stuff. And see what happens, but make the most of it, because if you're hitting hot, then they got to find a way to get you in the lineup sooner or later.
Yeah.
So that's how I would see it. But yeah, no, you can't win them all here. It would have been nice to take the sweep today, but you know, today's more just a really annoying loss. It's just an annoying one because you kind of felt once Rizzo hit the home run and you were good to go, and that was it. But
you know what? We took the series.
Took the series. That's what I'm saying. There's some fans who are like. No, I hear it on radio. They're just like jumping off the house and everything like that. And even the guys behind us, you know, they're.
Oh my God, those guys behind us. That's what made the game even longer.
Muppets. It's the Muppets. Come on.
Oh, they were so annoying.
Yeah, just whining the whole game. Just.
Oh my God. And then the kid who was like yelling bloody murder the entire game, too. Or the woman. I don't know if it was a woman or a kid. Couldn't tell.
And I'm glad you spotted that kid, by the way, in front of us, who was putting peanut shells on his fingertips.
Oh, that kid was adorable. I was fun watching him. I was like,
what is this guy doing? What the hell is he doing over here? He
was living his best life at the Yankee game, putting peanut shells on his fingers, giving himself peanut nails.
I guess.
That's what you do when you're his age. He was about, what, like six, maybe? Five?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, it was cute.
All right, so let's go ahead and give our awards of the week. We'll start off with our top of the heap hitter of the week, which I'm going to assume really isn't a conversation of too much to be had here. But I'm curious, though. I will start this one off.
Okay.
I'm going with Aaron Judge. I figure that's pretty much a given. And, of course, my phone craps out for 2 seconds. So as I had his stats pulled up on my phone. But over his last seven games, he's hitting .370. The .500 on base percentage, 6 home runs, 12 RBIs, 7 walks, 9 runs scored. I mean, the dude is just completely on fire. I mean, I know he had the one bad game against the Mets on Wednesday, but what are you going to do? And he almost hit a freaking 2-run homer to tie it in the 9th inning today. So can't do it every night. But, yeah, Aaron Judge is definitely my top of the heap hitter of the week. What do you have?
So knew he was pretty much the obvious choice. And I was like, you know what? Let me just look up everybody for the week. And I saw that somebody had a better average than him. So I went with that person. And I don't think you'll be upset. It's your boy who you're wearing the shirt today, Anthony Rizzo.
Yeah.
So he had an average for the week. He had a .375 average. His OPS was actually the same as Aaron Judge's, 1.483. 3 home runs, 5 RBIs. 5 runs, 6 hits, 3 walks. His on-base percentage was .545, and his slugging percentage was .938. So, shout out to Anthony Rizzo.
Yeah, can't go wrong. Can't go wrong. DJ LeMahieu, an honorable mention as well, because that dude's been on fire for like the last month plus. So, those are the three guys that are pretty much carrying it right now, along with Matt Carpenter. So, King of the Hill, pitcher of the week. Might have to dig a little bit for this one, but who you got, Lisa?
So it was a little challenging, but I'm going to give it to Jameson Taillon. So I had to just because of the stats, but he had a 0 ERA, 6 innings pitched, 4 hits, 0 runs, 0 earned runs, 2 walks, 8 strikeouts. His WHIP is 1.00, and the batting average against him for the week was a .182. Who'd you get?
I'm going with Jonathan Loaisiga.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to go with Jonathan Loaisiga. He pitched 2 1/3 innings, 2 strikeouts. So nothing like it's going to jump off the page at you. But I had mentioned earlier is that a little quietly, him and Chapman are starting to find their groove a little bit. And I think that's extremely important to what we're talking about with the bullpen right now. Not getting crazy and talking about, Clay Holmes is done or this and that, but they do need a legitimate setup man now, two high leverage guys, because Michael King is done for the season. So if Chapman ends up being the setup man, or if he's even here by Tuesday night, we'll see how that goes. And then Jonathan Weisiger, though, is a guy who I actually envisioned earlier in the year taking over as the closer. That hasn't gone that well. Clay Holmes has gone ahead and taken that. But Loaisiga is the setup man. If he could return to form, that would be phenomenal. And then you could refortify this bullpen back to the level where, it was earlier in the season. So, and over the last couple of years. Because Chad Green's also gone too. So there are openings for high leverage relievers in the Yankee bullpen. Help wanted. This is what it is. But how we can do these hires internally is what the key thing is here. I would like to see that.
And we broke our streak of picking the same people again.
We did. Judge, I knew was the obvious.
Yeah.
All right. So let's go ahead and get to our preview, though, of the Yankees Mariners, as the Yankees will be welcoming in the Mariners to the stadium starting the next 2 nights. And you got the Wednesday afternoon matinee. But big news for the incoming Mariners, though, is that Julio Rodriguez hit the IL this morning, hurting someone's fantasy team because they've had him in the pop culture pros fantasy league, but it's all right. He cannot play against the Yankees these next 2 weeks, and I'm not going to be that upset about it. The kid's been ridiculous. So what do we got? What are the pitching probables over the next 3 days?
So we actually have them all. There is no formidable TBD this time. There was this morning, but I made sure to check when I got home, and we have all six starting pitchers this time around. So thank you for that, MLB.com. So tomorrow night, it will be Marco Gonzalez. He's a left-hand pitcher. He has a 6-10 record, 3.66 ERA, and 60 strikeouts. He will be pitching against Domingo Germán, who is our right-handed pitcher, 0-1 record, 8.22 ERA, and 9 strikeouts on the season. I just want to reflect that last week when I said Domingo Germán, his ERA was like a 15. So it's going in the right direction. Keep it going. Progress. It's progress. And then on Tuesday, it'll be Logan Gilbert for the Mariners. He's a right-hand pitcher, 10-4 record, 2.78 ERA, and 118 strikeouts. He will be facing Jameson Taillon, who was my King of the Hill this week. He is a right-hand pitcher, 10-2 record, 3.72 ERA, and 92 strikeouts on the season. And then on Wednesday, that's going to be an exciting matchup because newly minted Mariner Luis Castillo will be pitching. He is a right-hand pitcher, 4-4 record, 2.86 ERA, and 90 strikeouts on the season. And he will be playing against our ace, Garrett Cole. He is a right-hand pitcher. I don't know what happened right there. A 9-3 record. I put 9-0-3 instead of 9-3. This is what happens when you're rushing. 3.30 ERA and 162 strikeouts on the season. So that game is probably going to be a very interesting one. Sucks that it's during the day because that means I can't watch it at work because unlike Ed, I can't. So I'll have to just look at the score on my phone every time I can. But yeah, that's the matchup for the week, for the Mariners series. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, Mariners rolling out three tough pitchers, so the Yankees offense is definitely going to be tested over these next couple of days. Against Marco Gonzalez, he's a lefty, so the Yankees got plenty of righties to stack up to go against him. He's also good, but not great. Logan Gilbert is really good, so they're going to have their work cut out for them on Tuesday night.
Yeah.
And I wanted Luis Castillo to be pitching in the Bronx after the trade deadline, but I didn't envision it to be like this. It is disappointing they didn't get Castillo. I really wanted them to get Castillo. He was a perfect fit. And I understand the Mariners, based on the prospects they gave up, they paid through the nose for him. So we'll see what happens. Supposedly, the Mariners wanted Anthony Volpe, and pretty much that's the where Cashman probably stops listening and just kind of hangs up the phone on people at this point. Unless it's Juan Soto, because then if it's Juan Soto, you should definitely keep that conversation going. And you can even talk Jason Dominguez and others as well. So, trade deadline is Tuesday night, though, so I'm really curious to see what the Yankees do. I definitely feel they're not done yet, but I don't know. Frankie Montes is from Oakland is the next guy that they're talking about that the Yankees could be interested in, but he does have shoulder problems, so not really sure I want a starting pitcher with shoulder problems. I know Jose Quintana from the Pirates is another guy that they're looking at, but I don't really know if he's better than anyone who's on the staff. I just think it's important that if you're going to make trades, that you make improvements, not just trade for guys who are not better than the guys they're replacing. Mm-hmm. Or if it's just a wash, it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. So I don't know. I don't think Juan Soto goes anywhere either. I have a feeling that the Nationals hold on to him and trade him in the offseason. I don't think they're in any kind of a rush or they're not pressed. But they have to do it immediately. And I think it was Ken Rosenthal or whoever, pretty much said the finalists right now are the Padres, the Dodgers, and the Cardinals. But that's also speculation. If it does last to the offseason, though, I would be curious, very curious to see whether if the Yankees get back and play for Juan Soto. I'm sure that goes hand in hand with the Aaron Judge re-signing as well. That'll have a lot to do with that, so. We'll see. Yanks could use another bullpen arm. D-Rob in Chicago is available. He'll be moved. And listen, he's done it here plenty of times. So I'd welcome David Robertson back with open arms. And just another starting pitcher, maybe one that's not on the radar right now, but that's what I would like to see the Yanks add. I'm hoping next week when we talk that that's what we're discussing. So we will be talking about what happens with the Yankees at the trade deadline. I got to believe something is still in the works. And Benintendi is a nice piece. He's a great fit for the Yanks. I think he's going to do well for them. I also want to see somebody going the other way named Joey Gallo, who apparently the Rays and the Padres – are interested in. So go. Please go. Just take anything. Cashman, don't you don't have to be picky about this one. This is a no-brainer. Anything. I'll take like a mediocre hot dog vendor. That. Not even your top one. You know, whatever it is. Just he's just gotta go. And I think he knows the writing someone wants.
Oh, so. He knows. He definitely knows.
Yeah, and the thing, I don't wish ill on the guy. I mean, I hope he works out wherever he goes. Doesn't seem like he's a bad dude. It's just, it's not working. So,
yeah.
That's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
All right. So then let's go ahead and wrap this episode up as we normally do. Thanks for joining us on this Sunday evening. Always fun. Thanks for joining us if you joined us on Facebook. If you are on Facebook checking us out, check out Pop Culture Pros and join that group. Also join the Empire 161 Show group. We share lineups and highlights and all other stuff that don't make the show. So you can check that out. If you're joining us on YouTube, hit subscribe for Pop Culture Pros. If you're joining us on Twitter, you should follow at Pop Culture Pros for sure. That's where actually puts out a bunch of good stuff. But also follow Empire 161 Show. That's our own personal Twitter handle. So you can join us. And we did get some conversation going on Twitter this week. There was some back and forth about some lineups and stuff. So keep that coming along. That's a lot of fun. And hopefully to see more of that and check out the show. And wherever you found your audio-only podcast, if that's how you're joining us, hit subscribe to Pop Culture Pros. There are many awesome shows on Pop Culture Pros to check out. There are so many. If you're into wrestling, Star Wars, Disney, if you just like hearing Tim and Eric talk, you can check out A to Z show as well. Because they're a lot of fun. If you're into comic book movies and TV shows and stuff, you can check out Granny's PhD. Me and Jason will be back on Wednesday talking about the season 3 premiere of Harley Quinn. Also talking about DC's League of Super Pets. Yes, we went to go see a kids' movie in the theater. Kids around, and we guys enjoy it. So go ahead and check out our review for that. We'll be also hearing Jason's thoughts about some stuff he's missed while he was on vacation. So, we'll see you guys next week. We're back talking about some more Yankees baseball, talking Yankees Mariners as well, and Yankees Cardinals. So come and check us out and the trade deadline. So, all right, well, let's go Yankees. Have a good week, and we'll see you next week. Peace.
Bye, everybody.